Hello and welcome to the Three Drinks In podcast, episode number 105. This is one of our Shaken Not Stirred episodes. We're talking about the 1967 Sean Connery Bond film, You Only Live Twice. I want to remind you that we are available on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Just search for Three Drinks In podcast and you'll find us. Hit that subscribe button so you never miss an episode. Tell your friends, leave us a review, or at the very least a rating. We'd really appreciate that. On Twitter, we are at Three Drinks In Pod. That's at the number 3 Drinks In Pod. Three Drinks In Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. And if you want to email us, we are Three Drinks In Podcast, all one word, at gmail.com. All right. Thanks a lot. And here we go. I finally have a beverage again.
What are you drinking?
The Ubu Ale. We've had it. I've had it many times on the podcast. Speaking of advertising, as we were earlier, we could possibly get people, you know, to pay us to talk about their beers on the podcast, though they have to send us some because I've noticed that my selection is relatively limited. Like I tend to buy the same few beers every time because that's just what I like. And I was standing in the store yesterday, just looking at the sheer amount. And our local store has a tremendous craft beer section; it's huge. But standing there in front of just the fridge that contains the 22-ounce bottles of sort of specialty. So a brewery, will have their basic stuff, the Speakeasy Brewery out of San Francisco has beers in six packs that I like. But then again, they have specialty 22-ounce beers you can't find all the time. And just standing there, going, I was like, I wouldn't know where to begin. It's becoming like buying wine, where it's just overwhelming with the sheer amount of choice you have. So it's a lot. So I tend to just buy the same 5 or 6 beers almost of the time because I don't want to think about it that hard.
Yeah. Well, you also, if you buy it, you get stuck with a lot left over that you don't like.
Which is kind of the benefit of buying it in 22 is to go, okay, well, I bought one bottle and it was okay and I drank half of it and I'm not going to, lose much sleep over throwing out the rest of it. But you're right, yeah, buying a 12 or a 6-pack, and you have one, you go, oh, no, I can't drink this. This is terrible.
Yeah, and then you're stuck with 5 other bottles or something.
That's whenever I have a party, I always feel obliged to buy beer, for the group. So I buy Stella Artois or Corona, neither of which I drink. And it's been sitting in my fridge since, the summertime. I'm like, I should probably just get rid of this now because it's probably not good anymore. But anyway, I have an Ubu Ale. What are you drinking?
I made a Mai Tai. Because why the hell not, I guess. With Bacardi and Meyer's Dark Rum.
Ooh.
Yeah. And it's delicious. So.
Very tropical, considering it snowed today.
Yeah, but that's okay.
Yeah. It's going
takes
up
me back
70...
to my honeymoon.
Oh, right. That's true. It's going up to 71 in a couple of days, so.
God bless global warming.
Bring it on, I suppose. Anyway, so Bond, James Bond. You Only Live Twice.
You Only Live Twice, which is the James Bond we've done.
This is the fifth movie. Yes.
Okay.
Fifth movie, but I believe it's not the fifth book. My father-in-law was talking to me about this the other day.
The books are all over the place.
Yeah, and I think what you know, I think On Her Majesty's Secret Service comes before this one in the novels, because he goes after Blofeld in Japan to take revenge for the killing of his wife, kind of thing. And
Spoiler alert.
yeah, in case you've never seen one of
60-year-old
them. So yeah, so this is a little out of order in terms of the books, but yeah, anyway, so you
which
only
is
live
fine,
twice.
because
Yolt.
those book Yolt.
Yeah, instead of YOLO.
Those books have been cribbed and robbed from to make up this the movie series, which is, I think most people would agree, is fine. The books are okay.
Yeah, some people really dig them,
They're not great.
but
They're okay.
it's they're very it's they're very genre. So like, if you like this genre, you'll love these books, you know. But
So this is the fifth James Bond movie.
yes.
And not the last to feature Connery, but he took a hiatus after this one, so.
Yeah, there was they made a lot of money, the producers, Broccoli and Saltzman, off of these movies. And this was the sort of the beginning of the movie star era. Like, slowly but surely, people, who were on screen began to command more power and more money. And Connery felt that he was, being ill-served by these producers. And so this was the last one he did in a row, and then they brought in the other guy, and they brought Connery back, and then Connery left again and made his own movie with, we still have to figure out if we're actually doing Never Say Never Again. It's really more of a legal battle, that movie. It's I'm not sure how else to discuss that film without going, well, this guy Kevin McClory helmed the, like, and then we'd be here forever.
Maybe we can do it as alter egos.
So
Something wacky.
what I didn't know about this movie until very recently was that it was written by Roald Dahl.
Really?
Roald Dahl, who
Now, what did he write over there, Johnny? Refresh our memories.
well, Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, for
Oh,
one.
yes. James and the Giant Peach.
Boy. I believe he was a terrible racist.
No. Was he?
And, well, did you watch this movie?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it was okay. Yeah. At least I didn't say gook, which I was
Didn't
looking for. I had my ears open for it.
they, though? I
Well, they didn't
mean,
say it, but
does anybody recall, show of hands, who recalls what Bond's first line in the film was? Anybody?
I don't remember.
Why do Chinese girls taste different?
Why did I think I said Asian girls?
No. No, the word Asian is never used in the film. It's, Chinese, Japanese, Oriental, which isn't really a big deal to me, but I can see how people kind of go, well, the Orient is not a very non-specific term for talking about a, a wide array of cultures and geographical locations. But anyway, yeah, Roald Dahl. I
Yeah,
was surprised to learn that.
he was friends with Ian Fleming, so.
Yeah, and then Ian Fleming wrote, I think, Chitty Chitty, Chitty, I can't even say this, Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should do like a crossover episode where we watch that movie.
Chitty bang bang.
So what did you think of You Only Live Twice?
I thought it was like vintage Bond in that it had gadgets and girls and all those elements that make a Sean Connery Bond, the one that everyone parodies and remembers, but it also had some issues, and I don't mean culturally.
Because it had those too.
It had those too, but I thought it was, I thought it, Sean Connery makes it fun. He seems to be having a good time, and he says the lines with that smile that, oh, it warms my heart to see him murder people and then crack a smile and stuff. You're like, oh, that's the stuff I'm looking for.
Yeah, he had a certain amount of inherent charm that made that particular activity somewhat easy for him to, you know, whereas not everyone could do that.
No. And I've seen the other ones in that, like, Roger Moore's goofy, not charming. And George Lazenby was about as expressive as a wooden block. And so when you see those ones, you're like, oh, man, I really miss Sean Connery. And then when I went back and watched this one, I was like, oh, yeah, it's nice to have a guy who can make a quip who believes it. Like, he's actually happy that he murdered that guy. Rather than, okay, Roger, just say something funny into the camera, you know?
Right.
So that really made it, it went a long way towards making the movie fun. You know, and plus it had the gadgets, it had an actual mystery he was trying to solve, which was nice.
Yeah, there was some sleuth work going on, some spy stuff. It's not just kind of like, you know, this is the guy, go kill him sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. And it had all the silly elements where you're like, oh, well, of course they didn't kill him, and of course he got away, or the piranha tank, you know. Instant death the minute you fall into it.
Oh, yeah. No, you really... It's no margin for error in that piranha tank.
Yeah. So it was okay. It was enjoyable.
Yeah.
2 hours.
Okay. Pre-title sequence. What do we think of the pre-title sequence? This is the set up Bond's death business.
Okay. So the that ties into my larger problem with the story. So I'll just, before I just jump into that, I'll just say that the pre-title sequence was fine. You know, whatever. It was short. I was surprised how short it was.
Yeah, it's pretty quick. I mean, like, they kill him, supposedly, and then the police show up right away.
Yeah.
They are on it.
Oh, he's dead. And then we're just...
I was never quite sure who was in on that. Exactly. Like, with, I guess the guys who were doing the shooting thought... They thought they were really killing James Bond, and the cops knew, I guess. And...
Well, are we going to just talk about that plot point, or are we still moving on the list?
No, go ahead.
Okay. Because that plot point was stupid. And I don't think anybody was in on it, because he fakes his own death. And then he just immediately starts getting recognized and attempted murder everywhere he goes. There was no point in faking his death at all. Everyone knew who he was.
Yeah.
They were like, oh, he's a... And even if they didn't know his name, they were like, this guy has a gun. He's clearly a spy. He's a giant, tall Scottish person pretending to be British in Japan and China, for God's sakes.
Yeah, he sort of stuck out like a sore thumb.
It was idiotic, and so much of the movie was like that. Like that whole scene where they tried to make him look Asian, and he's going to marry this girl and go undercover.
Yeah, that was weird.
How long did that last? He's got to train with the ninjas. That's like 20 minutes of the movie that has no bearing on anything.
No, it didn't really affect much of anything. Like, there are a lot of plot problems with this movie.
Well, I mean, that was my biggest in that. There was all this stuff that he did that he went through to lengthen the time of the movie that ended up not mattering at all. Like, he could have just stormed that guy's volcano lair. Why did he have to dress like an Asian person to do that?
Yeah, I mean, the faking the death thing, I can kind of see why he did that, in the sense that, like, okay, the Spectre was onto him and I have to, you know, throw them off the scent, and I can do that by faking my own death, and that way I'll get a little bit of time and I could get myself out of Hong Kong to Japan to start the investigation. Like,
well, it bought him 8 minutes of peace, because immediately he started getting gunned down again.
Yeah.
Like, everyone was trying to kill him.
I mean, it wasn't successful, but it wasn't necessarily a bad idea. The whole turning himself into a Japanese guy poorly.
Right.
For no reason that I could possibly imagine. Like, he's so tall. John Connery is so tall. And they had all the actors walk around in, like, stilts and like, just to get, like, halfway. And it just, yeah, it was more than a little bit racist and just not very effective. Like, he could probably sneak on the boat just as good as anybody else, but, you know, not by hiding in plain sight, because you can. It was kind of absurd. And, like, why did he have to marry that girl? Just go, like, walk next to her and say you're her husband. Who's watching the marriage records to make sure that this person is married before you go work on the island as a fisherman, which is entirely a ruse to make sure that no one comes and visits this volcano layer.
Yeah.
Which we already know is there. But we don't know where it is exactly. I mean,
there were so many moments like that where all that stuff seems superfluous. Like, I'd forgotten he'd faked his own death until he mentioned it later. Because he just started doing the investigation, and every time he did something, the people were trying to murder him. And I was like, wow, I forgot how many times people just barged in and tried to shoot him or something. And those guys always, you know, fail, obviously. And then when they do capture him, they come up with the elaborate ways of trying to kill him. Like, I'm going to bail out of this airplane now and hope it crashes with you in it.
Yeah.
Like, why don't you just shoot him? You got him.
There's that. We'll get to that in a bit. But that, like, it seems like this movie generated a lot of the stereotypes and the tropes that people later made fun of. You know, like, so some of them were already there, but some of them, like, they really kind of hammered it home with some of these. Like, you know,
That stuff really started with Goldfinger, and this continued a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really noticeable when you've seen it 50 times and parodied it 100 times, and it's still enjoyable. Like, I enjoyed watching the movie, but I mean, a lot of the time you're like, oh my God, like, they have him. And that's why that scene in Austin Powers where Seth Green is like, I will go get my gun right now and just shoot him. And they're like, no, we have to put him on the above the water with the sharks with the lasers. And you sit there like, yeah, he's got it. He's got it right. That's what you should do.
Like, I caught for a few minutes today The Last Action Hero. Remember that movie?
Yes.
And there was a scene in it because the kid goes into the movie and he's pointing out all the different, like everyone's.
That's why they have area codes.
I was going to say, everyone's number is 555. And, you know, the point where they get, like, captured by the bad guy and the kid shows up. It's like, hey, you know, your problem is you just kept explaining things. Stop explaining and just shoot him in the head. It's over.
Yeah. It was an underappreciated movie at the time.
Yeah. It doesn't hold up as well as we think it should, but at the time, just that kid wasn't very good.
No, but people didn't understand what they were trying to do. And, like, now it's more noticed, like, oh, they were making fun of these things.
Yeah, right,
that was the idea.
Actually, I guess that's a good way of looking at it. No one knew, like, you could do that.
Right.
Because every movie was like that. Only, like, the bad movies were like that. Now every movie made is like a superhero film.
And I think one of the problems was that they hired Arnold Schwarzenegger, but they didn't. There was no point where he was in on it. Like, his character was always playing it so straight, and, like, people went to see it thinking it was a real movie with him in it. There was no, like, this is a joke movie kind of, like, advertising to let people know. So people went in expecting an actual action movie, and they were like, what the hell is that? I don't get this. Why is he talking to that cartoon cat, you know?
And he was funny.
Well, he got it.
Like, he can be funny, Schwarzenegger, but, like, yeah, his character didn't come off as being sort of in on the joke, and when he kind of figures out what's going on, he gets to, like, kind of despondent about it. He's depressed,
right? Like, he realizes, like, he has this existential crisis of, like, oh my God, I'm an action hero.
Yeah, it's a deep movie. It's just, yeah, it was ahead of its time, as you would say. Unlike this film,
yes, which is very much a product
of its time. Let's see what's next on the list here. Theme song. I don't know why people thought Nancy Sinatra could sing, because she can't.
I skipped it, to be honest.
Yeah, I caught a few those bars. I was like, oh, you know what? I'm good.
They're like 8-minute long things. I just skipped it. I was like, oh, I got things to do.
They're 8 minutes long, and they've only got like 9 names to put up there. So it's a lot of silhouettes and things, and I'm not quite sure what was going on there.
Yeah. So,
so the song could have been great, but I'm not sure because she sucks. What else we got to talk about here? Yeah, let's go. There it is. Graphics. All right. So, villain, henchman, and girl. Was there a henchman in this? The guy didn't do anything.
Yes, Hans, the tall man.
Yeah.
He was very tall.
That was his.
Which is fine. They don't all have to have wacky things.
He didn't need to do anything. He was just enormous.
He was a big henchman.
Like, one short fight, which he loses spectacularly.
Ooh, yeah, the piranha pit.
Yeah,
Struck
again
man
with
in
the
30 seconds.
piranhas.
I know. Because after a while, like people complain that, I think it was Die Another or Tomorrow Never Dies. They just had a really big German guy. He didn't have anything. There was nothing special about him.
You could stab
I
him in the
don't
chest and he didn't seem to mind that much. That was kind of a superpower.
know. Yeah, like that guy was just all muscle, and that's okay. They don't have to have metal teeth, and like they can feel pain and other wacky things like that. There's only so many times you can turn the villain trope on its head.
Right.
You know.
Blofeld was really a ca like a cartoon in this, I felt.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
He's always been like that.
well, so I started watching because we made a mistake and we thought that the On Her Majesty's Secret Service was the next movie. So I began to watch that and then we realized, wait a minute, no, we skipped one. So
Yeah.
I'm halfway through that and the guy playing Blofeld in that film was Telly Savalas from Kojak. And he was really good and not a cartoon. Just, it wasn't a great movie halfway through, but like, you know, he was a pretty straightforward kind of villain. Didn't have that stupid scar on his face for no reason. And but like, I think he was bald because so was Telly Savalas. That's like what his thing was. He was a, it's like hiring Yul Brynner to do the job. It's like just hire a bald guy and it would make sense.
Yeah, because later the guy has a full head of hair.
What, like in the Craig ones?
No, in a later one, I think it's Diamonds Are Forever. Because I've seen that one before, and that Blofeld has like silvery hair. He looks good.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think in which one was it where they did the whole like everyone sitting in a boardroom and the chair drops you into a pit?
Wasn't that
Commercial Love?
I think that one was Thunderball.
Yeah.
Right? Everyone had a number, you know, number two, number three.
Yeah, right. Okay. So, but like
Yeah.
the guy behind the you don't see who number one is.
Right, you don't see him.
And it's but you see his silhouette and the bald silhouette, it was sort of obvious. And that guy did not have that. He just it was just some actor with a full head of hair. So they, I guess they decided to, you know, weird this one up and make him bald for some reason. And it just comes off looking, I guess maybe in 67 it was scary, but now it looks, just looks goofy. I mean, Dr. Evil really killed some of this stuff.
Yeah, well, you know what the problem I think with Blofeld is that, well, they lost the rights to him after a while, so they couldn't use him anymore anyway. That's why there was such a huge gap. But they were never consistent with him in that, like, he's a different actor and he changes from movie to movie, but also his personality is completely different. So in this one, he was like this cold, menacing character,
Right.
and like the scar on his face with the stupid cat. And then in later ones, he's much more outgoing and he doesn't always have the cat on him. All you can tell is that he's wearing the same kind of outfit. And it was always just like, why is he the bad guy again? Just because he is? You know, and there was no continuity. I mean, yeah, Bond obviously was a different actor, but he was the same character each time. I
Right.
sleep with women and I drink gin. And but Blofeld was always different. So you were like, why? You know, there was no loss of having him in those later movies. Just get some other bad guy.
Yeah.
Do it all the time was always just like, oh, it's that guy. Remember him? Didn't he die, or didn't he do something really stupid and then get caught? Like, why is he still number one?
Yeah, that like one guy made a like one small wrong move and they electrocuted him for Christ's sakes. This
Yeah.
guy fails consistently and you know, he's still
Like
hanging on.
he might as well be Dr. Claw from Inspector Gadget.
Oh
You know.
man. That guy must have been union, otherwise.
I know, right?
Yeah.
You can't fire me. I'm union, bitch. So.
So, the girl. Was there a girl in this one? There was a couple. But like there
Yeah.
was no sort of Bond girl. There was the girl he marries at the end who they don't quite do it, but he wants to in that really creepy late 60s sort of, we're supposed to get married, so we should have sex. Sex.
They kept telling him she was ugly. He's like, well, I'm not doing that.
And then, like, they bring up the one woman, and she's like an old hag. And he's like, ugh. And then, like, no, just kidding. You get to marry her instead. She's really hot. And it's like really fun. And then, so there's like the guy work, the woman who works for the what's it, the Tiger Tanaka, which is like
Right.
the
She was
most
in it.
used Japanese name of all time in movies is Tanaka
Yeah, or Tiger.
or Tiger.
Call me the Tiger.
All right.
All right. Call me the Edge. I play guitar.
And then the blonde girl
Whatever.
who, doesn't quite make it either. She,
And she's the villain.
yeah. Well, yeah. So like there really isn't a sort of standard Bond girl in this. It's there's girls, not like the Bond girl.
I was okay with that.
That's fine. This was just long enough, this film, in some ways.
Well, what they started doing in later movies is that they made a big deal about the girl, and then they made it like he starts to have feelings for them at the end. That never happens in these ones. They're always just meat to him,
Jesus.
Well, that's the joke. I mean, it's true. He sleeps with all of
Yeah.
them. So.
I'll say.
So I was okay with that.
All right, so let's take a look at, film was okay. It was it held my attention for the most part. Some of the stuff seems dated and some of that's like unavoidable. Like the rocket ship stuff. That must have been like, kind of terrifying in 1967. We hadn't gone to the moon yet. It was just, just everyone's flying up there. And you don't know what's going on and satellites. Everyone's afraid that the Russians were spying on us all the time. So it was a good way to play into people's fears, was to, like what if they could be kidnapped in space? And the whole technology was so new that you could, be forgiven looking back on it now, 50 years later, to say, okay, this was kind of a stretch, but but for the most part, the film kind of held my attention. But there were like a slew of weird things that I just took note of. I'm like, why is this happening exactly? So like some of them were small. Like why is the guy wearing a surgical mask when he stabs Mr. Uber British, who's giving away part of the plot in the beginning, and like Bond tackles him. That's just because Bond wanted to pretend to be him to get in the car, right?
Yeah, I think so. And of
Okay.
course, he looks like every other Asian man.
Right. So generic Asian guy wearing a surgical mask for no reason that we can think of, stabs Bond's contact in Japan. Bond then tackles him, kills him, puts on his coat and his surgical mask, and pretends to be injured so he can kind of like hunch over and look shorter. Gets in the back of that car, drives to the Osato offices, and then makes the driver carry him up the stairs. Like, doesn't the bodyguard driver guy realize I'm carrying a 220-pound, 6-foot-4 Scottish guy and not this 5-foot-6, 140-pound Japanese guy? Like, that never occurs to
Was the 60s, man.
him?
What do you want me to tell you?
I mean, it's kind of, yeah, so that was weird. The film really takes misogyny to a new level. It reminds me a lot of like 1990s films about like the Japanese were like kind of this, menacing economic entity that was like we're not very well understood. And this sort of like is the beginning of that. This is Japan coming out of the Second World War as like a powerhouse in terms of their economy. and they were very open but mysterious sort of culture, and like the whole sumo wrestling thing, and just the way in which they dealt with the idea of Japan was really dated in a lot of ways too. So it was kind of distracting when like he basically like offers him like a harem in his like private estate to get bathed.
Yeah, I mean, everybody was very worried about America and the USSR, but I think that was still like an enigma. Like that could go either way. And, well, what does China think? What does Japan think? Because, I mean, Japan was still rebuilding after World War II, and China was all over the place. So, and it played on the space fears and things like that. You know what I was thinking this morning too? Because there were these very slow scenes in space where the giant spacecraft comes and like takes over the little tiny spacecrafts, that we don't use the term special effects anymore. You ever notice that?
Yeah, I guess we
We just
don't.
say CGI.
Well, I guess because it's all.
It's all CGI, but like those
Yeah.
were all like effects and they were special. And I'm sure that they blew people away in 1967,
Oh,
but
yeah, that must have been like both the idea and the effect must have been really, terrifying. So.
and like I was not super impressed with them, but I was like, back then this was probably really cool.
Yeah. No, it looked
You
good.
know, the scene with the helicopter with all the gadgets on it.
Why don't you
It was
just
like
take one of my
pulls them.
helicopters? No, I'm gonna build one in this garage, and we'll do it in like a really awkwardly edited montage, and it'll be fine.
Yep. It's got the rocket launchers, the rear flamethrowers. It's fine. You're totally exposed, but it's okay.
It's just as good as any other helicopter. So ridiculous.
My favorite part was they were getting chased on the docks, right? Him and the girl, and he lets the girl go, and he starts shooting all the dock workers because they worked for the evil company that was working with Blofeld. And like he gets all the way to the roof. He's like punching guys out left and right, shooting them, and then he decides to escape by jumps over the side onto a bunch of boxes, and he does it twice.
Yes, he does.
He backflips onto these boxes, and then like they're full of soft, I don't know, fish, whatever. And the whole time I'm like, it's a good thing they weren't keeping boxes of nails on the docks. Like he just flung himself over the side.
Nails or literally almost anything else.
Yeah.
Most things that are shipped are not made of feathers.
And then he lands, and then like he thinks no one sees him, so he starts to walk, and then he gets nailed in the back of the head immediately, and he gets knocked out. I was like, well, that was the most anticlimactic way of doing that, but
Yeah.
okay, sure.
He
But
makes
yeah.
a lot of odd mistakes in this one. He goes, so he, like, after he kills the guy who kills the contact, he goes back to the Osato place and, like, steals some secret plans and, breaks into the safe. And then, but then he goes back there as, like, pretending to be somebody else who's interested in something. And they take one look at him and go, oh, okay, great, kill him.
Yeah, they were scanning him with the X-ray from behind the desk. He had a gun on him.
Oh, is that what they were doing? I mean, I just figured that they saw him on any of their many security cameras from the night before.
Yeah, no, he had because he they thought he was like invested in going to invest in their company, and so that's why he was asking about all the chemicals that they were making for Blofeld.
Sure, yeah.
And so while the Asian guy is behind the desk, he has like a special X-ray, and they can see Bond's chest, and he has a gun in his jacket, and that's when he realized, oh, he's somebody. Go and kill him.
Yeah, I just okay, fine. Yeah, I missed that, but it just seemed odd to me that he would run that risk of going back to the place he just was, when that they would have like video security, wasn't out of the realm of possibility. This is, yeah, it just seemed kind of risky to try that again. So yeah, rocket bullets, my favorite gadget, I think, in this entire movie. If a bullet isn't going fast enough for you, we have rocket bullets.
Is that what they did? I thought they exploded when they hit stuff.
They do that too.
Oh.
But he shows you, see, look, and there's like little holes at the back end of the bullet where it propels it really, really fast.
Oh.
Which seems odd because Superman was touted as being faster than a speeding bullet. So what you're saying is that the rocket bullet is faster than Superman?
No, we'll be a Superman.
I
That's
know that. I just it
irrelevant.
was just it was so ridiculous. I was like, this is the best you guys could do is rocket bullets.
No, I missed that. I thought it was just that they blew up when they hit something.
They do that as well. And also like the cigarette thing.
The
Like
cigarette thing, yeah.
that would have been okay. Like the cigarette, if there was a rocket in the cigarette, then okay, fine.
And see, here's the thing too, is that if you're going to show the gadgets, then he has to use them later. Which he uses the cigarette, but when does he use the rocket
Yeah, I
bullets?
don't think he uses the gun that fires the rocket bullets. I think, yeah, and he doesn't use the, they don't show him the suction cups thing at the, you know, where he has that for climbing on the inside of the fake of the roof for like that's like the fake volcano thing. He just happens to have suction cups
Yeah.
ready to go should they be needed.
It's a funny way of doing it, I guess, because the later Bonds, they always were like, and here's this and here's that, and like it would always come up. But if it's a really outlandish thing, then you do need to explain how he has it. So like in the beginning movies when he would have like a breathing apparatus and like the fake duck on his head, so he would be hiding under the lake. Okay, a breathing apparatus. That's not especially crazy. When you have a laser wristwatch, I need to know that your wristwatch has a laser in it, because otherwise I'm gonna call bullshit on that, you know, like as a viewer.
You think about GoldenEye?
Well, he had the laser in other ones too, didn't he?
I think so.
Like he always had the like one time they tell him about the garrote, the garrote thing.
Garot.
The wire in his wristwatch. And that's much more plausible than a laser. So you're like, okay, like, and don't explain to me that he has the wire in the watch. That's fine. But when you sit here and go, if you turn it this way and press here, it'll melt a man's face. I'm like, wait, what? How does that work?
Yeah, actually, it's funny that I don't think they actually mentioned the watch in GoldenEye. Like, you know, here's your laser watch. They mentioned the pen. They mentioned the belt, which has a grappling hook in it. The pen is my favorite. That movie really that's a good movie.
Well, very much that scene felt very much like this one, in that like he's caught, he's in the control room, he's got one gadget that looks very innocuous, you know, and he says like, can I have a cigarette? Sure, give it to him. Boom, blows up the control room. I was like, oh, this is like GoldenEye, which I guess came much after this, so
Yeah. So the end of the film is, I think, where it begins to fall apart. And I'm watching Phil get a refill
yeah, my wife just brought me another drink.
through the video feed here.
That's why I married her.
That's Love Actually, folks.
So the end of the film.
Yeah, things.
The volcano lair.
In the volcano lair, which great. You have you I mean I think I mean I'm watching him be turned into a Japanese person. I'm thinking, is this the tea house or the August moon? What the hell are we doing here? He was
Don't even know
just
what that is.
oh it was a kind of iconic movie. I forget when it came out. I want to say the 50s. And it was about like Japan after World War II, and Glenn Ford plays a U.S. military guy who falls in love with a Japanese woman. And it was a little advanced in terms of its social awareness about interracial marriages, but it also featured Marlon Brando as a Japanese guy. And everyone's like, yeah, that's a bit, you know, it wasn't quite at the level of like Mickey Rooney in Breakfast at Tiffany's, but it wasn't far off from that either. So it just looked That's all I could think of was, ooh, look, it's the house of the August Moon. But like, so like, once you're in the lair and people are falling into piranha pits, and it just like the whole thing sort of goes off the rails. And the moment where I realized that like this is just gonna be one, you know, shit show from this point forward, is when Bond finally meets Blofeld. You recall that scene?
Yeah.
So for the most part, Blofeld's been hidden behind something. Like, I can't think if the audience has ever gotten a good look at him.
No.
Do you recall?
No, it's always just been the cat.
Right, it's the cat. So you're looking at the cat, or like his lap, or his shoulder, or from behind. And then here he is, you know, Bond is in the room with him, and there's a guy standing in front of him. He goes, I am Ernst Stavros Blofeld, or whatever his name is. And then he just kind of leans in, like, just to the side to get past the guy who's standing in front of him. Like, the guy doesn't move.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just this really awkward moment where, like, your supervillain, who you've been chasing now for 5 movies, is finally revealed to you, and he doesn't, like, the guy standing in front of him doesn't even move out of the way. I'm like, wow, this is going to get weird pretty quick, because, like, and then he, like, takes him and, like, shoves him, like, get out of the way. I have to tell him who I am. I am Blofeld. Move. What are you doing?
I'm trying to do a thing here, if you could just sort of work with me.
Like, it's one of those things that, like, I'm surprised they didn't do that in Austin Powers, is have someone standing in front of Dr. Evil for no reason and have him kind of go, could you get out of the way? Or whatever it is. And so, like, then he shoots, like, he gets the cigarette and shoots a random guy in the control room, not the supervillain. Clear line of sight. I got this, you know, rocket-propelled bullet from my cigarette gun. I'm going to kill this one inconsequential guy.
I think that guy was about to hit a button, like that was going to blow stuff up.
But wouldn't killing the boss also stop whatever's happening?
Well, not if the other guy has his thumb on the button.
I don't remember.
Like, I had to get that guy first.
Maybe.
I don't know.
Maybe. And so, like, and then, like, mayhem breaks out. And then the ninjas with guns show up, and they kill some of the bad guys, and then some of the bad guys kill them. And they're looking for something called the exploder button.
Yeah.
You recall that? I'm like,
is
it really called the exploder button?
Something in the control room. Yeah.
Where, like, the button that explodes everything, it's just what it does. It's the exploder button. I was just, and then, like, what's the girl there? Like, why was she following him at all?
Well, she was his trusty sidekick wife.
And then he's like, okay, I found what I need. Now go back and get so-and-so and bring everyone he's got. And then she comes back with him and then just spends the next 20 minutes running with her hands above her head. Like, why didn't she stay outside the volcano lair and not show up? Like, she's just making herself into a liability here.
Yeah.
And then, like, the big German guy comes and he gets kicked into the, like, and Bond's like, bon appetit. And I'm like, how does he know what's eating him? No one ever explained to him what that was. So that guy falls in and, like, a bunch of bubbles come up and he dies. I guess he could, like, we can't see through the water. It's all green and murky. I guess because they didn't actually have piranhas.
Yeah, this one felt like, and I was reading, you know, Roald Dahl apparently had never written a screenplay.
I'm not surprised.
And he took the book and he was like, there's no movie here. I don't know how to do this. And what he did was basically copy Dr. No. And it felt like that when I watched it.
Oh, yeah, I guess he
in
did.
Which there was a lot of, like, weird stuff and Bond was trying to figure it out, and along the way, he was sexing women and trying not to get murdered. And a little bit more exciting because the budget was better and it was a little funnier. Because Dr. No was a boring film. And then the end was much more, well, we have to make it exciting. What did we do with the other ones? Let's go to Goldfinger. What did they do with that? Well, we had a big knockdown, drag-out thing at Fort Knox. There were soldiers everywhere and bombs were about to go off. There have to be high stakes. So it's like they mashed the two together, in which like the last 20 minutes was nonsense, and the first hour and 40 minutes was sleuthing and sex and murder. And it really jars quite distinctively, you know.
Yeah. No, it's sort of like all of a sudden it's just chaos. And
And it still straddles that line of like, well, how silly do you want this to be? And when you get to the Roger Moore stuff, it's very silly. And in these ones, it's kind of like a tongue-in-cheek kind of, well, you know, I got the exploder thing, and he can't just be a regular spy. He has to be a little bit out there so people will watch and be entertained. But it still has this really awkward, like, you know, piranha tank, like, you know, okay.
it's funny. I in watching that Last Action Hero movie, there's a scene in that where, so the kid and Arnold Schwarzenegger's character go back to like his apartment, which is like this really shitty one bedroom or one room apartment, like next to the freeway. It's not glamorous at all, and he's kind of confiding in the kid. He's saying like, listen, all I wanted to be was a a good, decent cop, and yet I keep having these crazy adventures, and they get crazier and crazier. And the kid's like, "Well, yeah, these are the sequels. It has to get harder. It has to get, like that." And which I thought was really funny. That reminds me of this and that. Yeah, okay. So this is back at, during a time when nobody was making movies like this. Like, the only reason Sean Connery did this was because he was the only one who agreed, or rather the first one who agreed to do more than one movie. Like, I think it was Cary Grant they approached first, and they said, "Do you want to be James Bond?" He's like, "Great, yeah, sure, fine." He's like, "We want you to sign up for at least five or six movies." He goes, "Absolutely not." And I think at the time that that instinct as the actor is correct, because TV was made that way, and TV was considered to be a threat to film. To be sure, but it was also considered to be inferior in terms of the quality of its product because people in TV couldn't get work in movies. That's why they did TV, and they didn't mind doing the same damn thing 50 or 60 episodes a year, which is what they used to film. And movie actors, stars especially, didn't want to get cast like that, stuck doing the same thing over and over again. And so this is the first time you had a production company who was willing to, take this idea and really make a franchise out of it and make a whole boatload of films. So the impetus was for, for up till 93 when The Last Action Hero was made, and then beyond, we're, if we decide to make a sequel, which we may not do, it has to be bigger, better, stronger, faster, whatever it is, than the first one. Otherwise, no one is going to come back and see another movie with the same people in it. There has to be something to get them into the theaters. And so Bond suffers from this where you watch the arc, in terms of like the crazy scale. It gets crazy, the longer they go. I think it m movies made now, like, you look at Marvel, they're not getting crazier. At Marvel, they just decided, well, we're going to do this. We're going to make different movies within the same genre, which no one had ever considered before, that I can think of. DC and Warner Brothers still kind of doing, that old model of let's make it crazier. That way, it'll be more exciting. But, the way to do this better is to, have the story be different, have it be continuous, which is why the Craig movies. The four of them, they all relate to a single thread that's, weaving its way through the character, versus taking the character independent of anything and just having the shit around him get more and more nutso. And yeah, I mean that's sort of how, like, that with the budget, made this the direction all these films went in. So.
Yeah, I mean, well, Bond has that issue where he's very much like Indiana Jones in that he's not so much defined by what he is as a person versus what he is as a walking gun that drinks gin.
Right. It's what he's doing versus who he is.
Yeah, that's
Yeah.
why it was not easy, but he could be replaced. It was, well, we'll just get somebody else if Connery doesn't want to do it anymore.
Yeah.
It's hit or miss sometimes, but it was okay. Like every time they tried to give him some more dimension, people kind of react against that. His wife didn't make it more than 6 minutes, so.
It's true. It's a risky thing to begin with. Yeah, I mean, like if you look at the Brosnan ones, they the Brosnan films sort of encapsulate everything about the previous movies before you get to, I think, to Timothy Dalton, like all in like four. So it goes from pretty straightforward action movie in GoldenEye to invisible cars and diamond-faced villains in Die Another Day. Like it gets nuts quick.
Yeah.
You know, like, you know, you so what you'll do is you're gonna parasail the tsunami that's happening because of the giant space laser. And
Yeah.
Pierce Brosnan's like, whatever, that sounds great. You know, the check cleared, so let's do this thing.
I'm also stunned at just in general, how fast they crank them out.
Yeah, they did these movies really quickly. They
You know,
were,
like, no
yeah.
wonder Sean Connery wanted to stop. I'm looking at the list right here. First one was in 1962, then 63, 64, 65, 67. He was like, I'm out of here. Next one with George Lazenby was 69. That's six movies in, I don't know, one, two, three, four, 8 years. That's crazy.
Yeah, now it takes us 3 years to get one.
Well, now it takes. I mean, Casino Royale was 2006, Quantum of Solace 2008, and then there was a long break, 4 years between Solace and Skyfall, and 3 years
It
till
was
Spectre.
4 years, really? It was that long?
Yeah, because Quantum of Solace was so terrible that they were like, "We need to do something here.
Yeah.
We just got a new guy, and we don't want to sour this." So. Yeah, so no wonder. I mean, they got silly real quick. I mean, they had to have them out fast.
Yeah.
So,
It was a different time. It really was.
well, I mean, they're making Star Wars movies by the minute here, so.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Know.
I'm thinking about Solo and going, oh, we have to sit through that, don't we?
Hey, if I had to sit through Suicide Squad, you can sit through Solo.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah. In fact, you should sit through Solo and I'll stay home. I just won't go. Guys can tell me how it was.
One of these days, we should really do that thing that they did at the at Red Letter Media, where
We'll
one of
just
us
watch
goes
half a
in,
movie.
one of us goes in for the first half of the film, and the other one goes in for the second half of the film,
Yeah.
and we'll see if that's still the funniest thing I've ever seen on the internet.
I can see like the people who rip the tickets to be like, "Are you leaving?" "No, I'm handing it off to him." And like they're just staring at us like they don't know what we're doing.
We have to discuss that with the manager. So listen,
Yeah.
we're gonna buy one ticket to this film. I'm gonna
God, is
watch the
that
first half, and he's gonna come in and watch the second half.
that allowed? You know, I don't
Get
know.
behind the counter. I don't know. We can do that.
Like I'll buy another popcorn if it'll help.
So.
So overall impressions, it was I liked it. It was fun enough, minus all the, I didn't think about the cultural aspects too hard.
No, I it wasn't too distracting. It was just kind of like a lot of moments. Where like that's funny.
Yeah, we're
And
doing this now. All right.
yeah, like the some of the like the misogyny in this one does sort of stand out. And maybe we're right now in a culture that's sort of sensitive to that, and so you know, it's sort of on our minds. And so whenever you know, you see him kind of look at these three women who are going to bathe him next to the other guy in like the next tub. like with no partition. They're just all going to hang out naked and get washed. It's just sort of, it's obvious that, oh, this is not how we do this anymore. Yes. Yeah, but like that, yeah, I mean, the overall, as a action piece devoid of any social commentary, yeah, it was good. And having seen the first half of On Her Majesty's Secret Service, it's better than that is. I'm not looking forward to finishing that one.
Oh, you didn't finish that one?
No, I kind of stopped. I was like, let me just focus on this one, and then I'll come back to that one.
Mm-hmm.
But
I think one of the things that hurt this one as well was that in Dr. No, you don't know what's happening. And in this one, it's quite obvious what the plan is from the beginning. But you're watching Bond try to figure it out. And that takes a while.
Yeah, so it sort of makes it slower because the audience knows what's going on. Whereas the characters don't know, but you do.
Yeah, you do. Whereas in the old, you know, in Dr. No, you don't know any more than Bond does.
Which was, I guess, also true in From Russia with Love, because you were in on it with Spectre there, to Smirsch or no Spectre. You know, you knew about their plan as well,
right?
But he didn't. But for some reason, I mean, that was sort of a more straightforward spy movie. It didn't really get nuts.
Right, that was still early where they were like, they stole this decoding thing. You need to go get it. Because the plan was to sell it to one of the powers to destabilize things. And I was like, all right, that's simple enough.
Yeah, it was pretty straightforward. And so that you knew that and Bond didn't, it was fun to watch him try to figure it out. Whereas here, it was such a crazy thing. You're like, well, he's never going to figure this out. It just seems like it's so ridiculous. You know?
Yeah. We're just waiting for him to be like, it's not either country. Like, you know, it's not America and you know, it's not Soviet Union. It's the people who just want money. So
yeah, there's sort of no tension in the film in terms of whether or not it's going to go off. Like, cause you, at this point, you know, he's going to do it. Like that, I mean, that's the hardest part of any, you know, movie made today, since most movies are in one form or another a superhero film where the bad guy always loses and the good guy always wins. And the more you make them, like with the upcoming Infinity War movie from Marvel, because we know so much about how the films are made, you can kind of see them like, well, you know, Iron Man may not make it or Captain America may not make it because the actors themselves don't want to play the part anymore and they're getting old and they need to move on to the next phase of their, you know, their plan for these franchises. But it's still difficult to try to make a movie where the bad guy can't win that keeps you in suspense.
Mm-hmm.
And this was the beginning of those movies in terms of pop culture. And so everyone kind of knew Bond was going to pull it out.
Yeah, well, that was never in doubt.
Right. So, like, you know, you kind of have to find a way to make it suspenseful, and they didn't.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't know how to do
that.
If
you're not along for the ride with Bond, and you're just sort of watching him go, and you need the action scenes to make up for it, which did an okay job in this film.
Yeah.
You know, all the punching, and like, he has a license to kill, and he uses it. You know, it's not a goofy thing that he starts shooting dock workers in cold blood.
Yeah.
You know, like he takes it seriously on screen. So you're like, yeah, I got to kill that guy. He might kill you, you know, and that gets the tension up again. So,
So I
liked it overall.
Yeah, it was good. It was,
it wasn't
different.
The best, but
no, it was different. And, you know, in the sense that it was, you know, different settings, so he had all the cultural things to deal with, and
yeah, I wonder how many people, like, you know, like, our father's not around and he watched all these movies, to ask him, like, was it a big deal to see all these locations and this other culture? You know, I mean, how many movies did people watch back then that dealt with Asian cultures? Probably not many.
Not a lot. You know, not in terms of like these kind of movies.
Right. And unfortunately, these ones have a lot of stereotypes, but I'm sure back then they were like, oh, wow, is it really like that there? I don't know.
So,
The way people watch like movies about Afghanistan now, like, oh, wow, is the whole place like that? No, but
not exactly.
yeah, so.
But yeah, overall, pretty good.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah, I liked
It was okay.
it. Aggressively medium.
All right. Well, if you have any thoughts about You Only Live Twice that you want to share with us, you can tweet us at the number 3 drinks in pod. That's at 3 drinks in pod. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at 3 drinks in podcast. If you want to email us, it's 3 drinks in podcast@gmail.com. What else was I have to say? Oh, yeah. We are, of course, available on iTunes, Google Play, and Stitcher, and TuneIn Radios. Search for 3 drinks in podcast, and you'll find us there. Hit that subscribe button. Tell your friends. Leave us a review. We really appreciate that. And stay tuned for our forthcoming episode dealing with the film Black Panther, which is not a
Yeah.
1970s documentary, I've recently learned.
Well, womp womp. Did you see the teaser for Venom?
I did.
Interesting, right?
Yes. And I kind of like that Tom Hardy, because Tom Hardy doesn't do things sort of, like haphazardly. He makes very specific choices about the films he's in. And I can't tell if we talked about this, but I was thinking about it with like Michael Fassbender. Because he made that really awful Assassin's Creed movie, and I'm like, that was a misstep. That was a
Oh,
that that.
sometimes people make mistakes.
Yeah, Tom Hardy doesn't seem like the kind to suffer fools though, and so I think that he wouldn't have made the picture had he not been pretty confident that it wasn't going to be like a weirdo one-off kind of.
Yeah, it's
Because it's
very
a, it's
odd
a.
that they're doing it.
Yeah, it doesn't seem to involve Spider-Man at all, which is okay. I'd actually be more curious to see this told from a different, kind of like Logan was a different kind of superhero film.
Yeah.
Watching a guy become a supervillain, we haven't seen a film about that before.
Not a whole film.
No.
We get those lame origin scenes, and that's about
Right, the 89 Batman, which is mostly about the Joker, because you hire Jack Nicholson, so.
right, and all the best ones, they always tend to be bad guys to begin with. Like he was a bad guy in that. And then I think of, say, Alfred Molina in Spider-Man 2. He's a generally good person, except that the evil robot arms make him evil. And he's one of the better villains in those things. I'm just
Right.
like, the robots, he programmed them to be evil for some reason, and now they're making him a bad guy. Like,
Why would they have that ability? Who would make these for him?
that's what I always thought. Like, why is the default setting evil?
Worry, I've got the inhibitor chip. We're all good.
Yeah, shouldn't that be like a base function, like having the start button always in the window of your screen? I don't know. Like, why would that shouldn't be able to turn off? Like the safety's on the holodeck.
It's the equivalent of the control alt delete thing. Like,
Yes, that should always be.
why make it that complicated? I don't get it.
Just always turn it on. All right. Anyway.
Anyway, so like I said, do all those things on Twitter and social media and iTunes and what have you, and stay tuned for Black Panther. We'll talk to you next time. Oh, and please drink responsibly.
Take care, everybody.
As per usual. Bye.
Or so it seems. One life for yourself and one for your dream. so pay the price. Make one dream come true. You only live twice. And love is a stranger who'll beckon you. True, you won't.